There's probably a little bit too much fuss made about scores.
I think I'm a farmer deep down at heart. I wanted a family endeavor.
It's not about what someone else says. It's not about what rating it got. It's about what you enjoy drinking.
Wine, to start with, is something that is social.
It's about networking. It's about calling up people and ask for advice. And everybody's willing to help out.
Consumer wants something that's uncomplicated about wine. Why do you want one more thing to worry about?
I would trade this for nothing. It is my life and it is my dream.
You know, you only get to make one wine a year. It's not very much. I've been making wine most of my adult life, you know. It's only 35 Cabernets. I don't think that's a lot. I'm up for more.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle. And welcome to our 58th podcast, May 2012. This month, we feature proprietors of Madonna Estate Winery, Buck, Sue, and Brett Bartolucci.
The Carneros AVA of Napa Valley is well known for excellent Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And in Carneros is where you'll find Madonna Estate Winery. The Bartolucci family has an extensive history in Napa Valley, and after years of chatting with them at Premier and Auction Napa Valley, we were finally able to sit down with owners Buck, Sue, and Brett Bartolucci in February of 2012.
Oh, wait a minute. We're going to turn this around and start interviewing you.
I'm at Madonna Estate Vineyards. I'm being serious now. Estate family vineyards, right?
I can see this is going to be.
It's not a bad way to start.
No.
I am here at Madonna Estate Vineyards in the Carneros area of Napa Valley, and I'm here with Buck Bartolucci, Sue Bartolucci, and Brett Bartolucci. And I said all the bees and got away with it. So, hi everybody, how are you doing today?
We're good.
We're very good.
Yeah. Great. Now, this is in February, and as most folks know, February is known as winter in this part of the country. And it's, about 60 degrees outside, give or take. Buck, let's start with you. Do you see this being something that's going to have a long-term effect on the 2012 season, that we have such an incredible day?
Well, we've had a relatively dry winter and early spring, so our concern is at this point that with the weather being warmer, the vines are going to start to grow a little bit earlier than normal, and that makes them susceptible to spring frost. So that's our big concern at this point, that they don't push out too soon and the weather turn too cold, and then we would be frosted and then lose some of the crop or potential crop.
Is there any, and I know this is asking you to sort of predict the future a bit, but is there any kind of a tip-off you get that you might be dealing with frost, or any kind of a, you know, a sign, or is it just simply it happens when it happens?
There's no real indication. In other words, at the beginning of the year, I can't tell you if it's going to be a serious frost year or light frost year. Historically, we always get a little frost, and generally it's after we get a rain shower, an impulse of cold weather from the Gulf of Alaska, then the next couple of nights potentially could be cold.
So as we head into the season, we're looking at this crazy winter weather we've had. 2011 was a rough growing season for a lot of you folks out here. You guys are big Pinot growers, correct?
Yes.
That's correct.
How did you fare? Did you have a lot of loss?
Yes, we suffered severely. Our crop was in Pinot was about 50% at normal. We had some varieties that we were unable to pick at all because there just wasn't sufficient fruit as a result of the late spring rains and then the early September rain. So I've been doing this for 40 some years, and this was the worst year I've ever experienced, most difficult.
Really, the worst year? Wow.
because of course this is how you make your living. That's where the romance of wine isn't all that romantic.
Well, we're dependent upon Mother Nature, and we're dependent upon a decent crop, and if we don't get it, then we have less grapes, less wine, and therefore less potential income.
Right, which makes a big difference. Now, how many cases are you guys making here at Madonna?
We do about 12,000 cases a year. We're a small winery. That sounds like a lot, but that's quite a small number. We're fortunate in our location in the valley. We have a very active tasting room, so a big percentage of our wine is sold either direct to our customers, or we have quite a large wine club, so we ship wines to our wine club members.
Do you mind if I ask, and I'm more curious myself, how many people are in your wine club, roughly?
Well, that's what I do. So we have about close to 5,000 members.
Wow. Yeah. That's a lot of management right there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a full-time job.
Yeah, I would think so. It's a lot of wrangling just to make sure that everybody gets what they're supposed to get when they're supposed to get it. Wow.
And it's kind of specialized, too. You do specialized things with the people, too. So.
We do. I feel we have a great relationship with our members, and we haven't done a lot of events, but we offer a lot of great sales of wines to them as that they wouldn't normally get, such as library wines or discounts. So, you know.
And people love library wines, don't they?
They do.
Yeah. That's really exciting because you really feel you're getting something that the average person can't get. What do you regard as a library wine? Are we talking 10 years ago? I mean, you know.
For us, it's usually within the 5-year range, upwards of 8 years, so not usually beyond that. But we have a nice selection stored away in our warehouse that we keep for people that really enjoy our wines and kind of cater to those customers that enjoy those wines. So.
That sounds like a fun place to visit every now and then.
I know.
Well, Brett really gives our people a personal touch. They can call her for advice, like where to stay, and
all. Oh, nice.
They can. Yeah. And I offer up my mother's home. No. Just kidding.
So I'll be back in June. So
right. It's just a great view of the vineyard.
Oh, nice. Nice.
One of the unique things about our winery is we do 10 different varieties. So most wineries out here in Napa do specialize and do 2 to 3 varieties. But because of the way our business has built over the years and because we have 160 acres of land, we have a lot of different varieties that we make so we can offer many wines to our club members.
And is everything estate?
Everything is estate, and all our grapes are organically grown.
I gotta imagine there's got to be a great deal more pride than just having leased property.
Well, it's not only pride, but you have complete control because you're in charge of how the grapes are grown, what the crop load is, the quality of the grapes determine the quality of the wine. So if you're doing it yourself and the emphasis is on quality, of course you're going to do the best possible job you can.
I think one of the things that makes Buck great is he does it all. When we bought the land, it was bare. He planted it. He tends to the land. He does harvest. He does the work in the lab. He does everything. So
kind of a one-man band.
Yes. Well, he has helpers. We help him. But
we're not a one-man band in the sense that I'm responsible for everything, but certainly I have helpers that help me do everything. With 10,000 cases, you couldn't physically do it all yourself.
No, but it's great that you know you've been through all the stages and you know how to do everything, so he knows the whole business from the ground up.
The other thing is we chose to be a smaller winery. I mean, we could have grown and become a bigger winery as far as volume is concerned, but one thing you learn as you go through this thing, as you grow, you become a manager and you no longer can be hands-on. You can't be involved out in the vineyard. You're stuck behind a desk making decisions that managers have to do. And we chose not to do that, so I can still spend time in the vineyard, time in the cellar. Certainly, I have to spend time in the office, but I enjoy that aspect of it.
That's the least favorite part.
Yeah, I think we would all agree with that, all the business owners. But I think the idea, one of the most satisfying, I imagine, other than making the wine itself, has got to be spending some time out in the vineyards, especially, you know, when you see everything starting to pull together.
To me, it's one of the most exciting parts to take and put a plant in the ground, nurture it and see it develop, and then harvest the crop and turn it into wine with the desire of producing the best quality you can. Sometimes you do an excellent job. Sometimes you're a little disappointed in the outcome, but that's what makes it exciting.
I want to talk about replanting here, because one thing about all my travels out here in Napa, when you see replanting and when you got an idea of how long it takes to go through this process, for me as an average wine drinker, I think that's an incredible investment of not just capital, but time. So you've been doing some replanting, you're telling me.
Yeah, the time frame on replanting is generally you want to remove the older vines, and the reason you're removing them is because although vines will live to be 100 years old or plus, they're not productive enough to keep them in the ground. So after 25, 30 years, 35 years, you're forced to remove them and start the process over. It's generally a good idea to let the land lay idle for 1 year. Then the following spring, we come in with a selected rootstock, because in California we have a bug that lives in the soil called phylloxera, and if you plant the native root, this bug will attack it and ultimately kill it. So we're forced to go with a rootstock that's resistant to this bug phylloxera, and on that rootstock we bud or graft the variety that we would like. It takes, from the first spring planting, it takes about 3 to 4 years before you start to receive a crop. After about the 5th to 6th year, you should be up almost to full production. So you may be looking at 5, 6, 7 years before that is starting to produce and bring back the income that you need to support the cost of farming.
When you're going through this process, and this might seem a silly question, but is there a lot of, you know, chewing your nails and just not a lot of sleep? Is it fairly smooth when you do a replant? I know there are no guarantees in anything with nature, but or is it a fairly predictable process?
It's a predictable process from the standpoint of, you know, as long as you do it in the proper manner, in other words, you plant the plant properly, you support it with irrigation, and you do the things you need to do. Grapevines are a pretty remarkable plant in that they are the real hardy, so therefore, you know, you're not going to lose them unless you do something disastrous.
So don't screw up is what you're saying.
Pretty much.
Got it. Well, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to the family members here is because, again, Life Between the Vines, we always love to talk about family, because as it is in the Vintners Association, I believe, what is 80% of the members are families. Talk to me a little bit about the history here. We're in Carneros, and your family's been here for a long time.
We've been in Carneros since 1970, but prior to that, my family was in Oakville, which is in the heart of the valley. My grandfather started there in 1922. He bought a 20-acre piece of land right on Oakville Crossroad and Highway 29. Your knowledge of history, 1922 was Prohibition. It had an existing vineyard and winery, but he wasn't permitted to make wine. During those years, the way the family survived was they would pick the grape, package them, put them on a rail car, and ship them to San Francisco. My father would go to San Francisco and be on with the grapes and sell directly to people who wanted to make home wine, because although you weren't permitted to make alcohol commercially, as a head of a household, you can make 200 or 300 gallons of wine for family use, and that's the way the vineyards existed during those years. 1934, with repeal, they made their first commercial wine, they being my grandfather and father. They made 5,000 gallons of a generic red wine. Generic being, in those days, the vineyards weren't planted to the varieties that we grow today. They were more like Carignan, Petit Sirah, Mission, more productive varieties, but less quality varieties. They made 5,000 gallons, and I believe they sold it for something like 15 cents a gallon and actually made money at it. So the market has changed a bit over the years. My father had two brothers, and they became partners and bought out my grandfather. Over the years, they increased the 22 acres to 275 acres and built the winery up to a 500,000-gallon capacity. Our current winery here is 50,000-gallon capacity, so it was 10 times bigger than what we have today. But the market in those days was much different than what it is today. Wines were made much bigger lots, and that's the way the industry was run. In 1970, for reasons of family reasons, that generation was getting older, a decision was made to sell the property in Oakville. And at that time, I had gotten the bug and wanted to continue growing grapes and making wine. And so I was able to buy 160 acres in a new area, an area that hadn't been developed, called Carneros, the southern end of the Napa Valley. It's the coolest area in the Napa Valley, so therefore those varieties that we grow down here are more Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, earlier maturing varieties. So I bought 160 acres, and I spent the next 6 years planning that. My dad had retired after he sold his property in Oakville, and he was, at this point, driving my mom crazy, so I talked him into building the little winery that we have here. And in 1977, we bought 4.5 acres on the Highway 121 and Old Sonoma Road. And we spent the next 6-7 years physically building the winery from nothing to initial tasting room, cellar, fermentation area. And then over the years, my dad would come in and we would add on, and to the point now where we have a winery of about 12,000 square feet and 50,000 gallon capacity, which roughly means about 20,000 case potential. So that's our history here.
Just to go back for a second, when you'd bought the property here, there were no vines at all? Well, there's nothing pre-existing, or?
At the time I bought the property in Carneros, there were about 5 vineyards here. Most notably was BV Vineyards, BV5, which is where Andrew Chelichev does his experimental work with Pinot Noir, and our property actually touches that property, so it's kitty corner to that. Louis Martini at that time had 2 vineyards down here, one on Las Amigas Road and one on Stanley Lane. They no longer have that property anymore. It's since been sold. And up on the corner next to where the winery is was Winery Lake Vineyard. Rene DeRosa started in the mid or early 60s and planted his vineyard. So those were the properties that were here at that time. So literally it was primarily pastured, dairy land, beef cattle, pasture land, and some smaller horse places.
My, how things have changed.
Yes. We wish we'd bought all Carneros.
Yeah, yeah.
If you'd only know.
If hindsight was 2020.
Well, it's sort of like when they sold the property up Valley, they had 3 pieces, and one of them is in Yountville. One is behind the winery near Oakville Grocery, and one was near the old Red Hen restaurant, which were all prime pieces of land. And when they sold it at the time, they thought they were getting the most they could ever possibly get for that property. And if they had only known then too.
But who would have thought? And you were saying, was it 1970?
1970.
You were just minutes away from the revolution.
We were at the beginning. We had everything primed to go, and then we had to start all over again. So it's kind of sad in that aspect, because we would have been one of the first people.
Well, it's sad from the standpoint of, you know, what we had and where we are, but the advantage is that we're our own bosses. We don't have to make decisions by committee. It's just our small family here, so there's an advantage to it, I believe.
Yes, our daughters, both of them are partners. Brett, who's here today, and Taylor, who's not feeling too well, they're partners with us in the winery.
And again, that's, I think, the most exciting thing. You know, the number one employer of people in the country is small business. And you guys are the very example of that. And the best part is it is all family.
This is the end of part one of podcast number 58, Madonna Estate Wines. Visit lifebetweenthevines.com to download the remaining two parts.